So talking about money can be difficult, right? Like how much you have, how much you don't have, how much you want from a particular job. It's all not easy to talk about. Well, stand-up comedy is also not that easy. Standing on stage, oh yeah, somehow, don't worry. We're going to combine those two as we learn more about money. Thanks for listening and subscribing to Learning More. It's Russ with you. And this week, we are talking money. It's not an easy conversation to have, whether it be with your spouse, your significant other, your parents, your boss, your coworkers. Like, it's never really easy to talk about money. And to help us learn how to talk about money and kind of get even away from some of the shame that is there around money is Bob Wheeler. Now, he's a CPA. He's an author. And something you wouldn't expect, a CPA, but he's also a comedian, a stand-up comedian. Bob, thank you so much for joining me today.
Russ, great to be here. Looking forward.
So how do you go from CPA to stand-up comedian?
Well, you know, everybody's passion is to be a CPA, but comedy, you know, pays the bill. Right. So you just go where there's easy money.
Oh, yeah.
You just go.
Oh, yeah. I hear there's huge money in comedy.
Huge money. Yeah. Now you are everybody else but the comic.
Yeah, right. Right. Well, you actually got to stand on stage at the Comedy Store and you also do the books. So you know how much they make there, right?
I do. I am the CFO at the Comedy Store. And I kept trying to tell everybody, look, I'm just a comic. I don't want this gig. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I do know, and I've been there coming on 25 years and we're coming on a 50 year anniversary. So that's pretty exciting.
Wow. Yeah. It's amazing. And if somebody's listening and you don't know the Comedy Store, it's ridiculous. Go do some searches. If you watch anything on Robin Williams or Richard Pryor or Jay Leno was huge there, David Letterman, everybody really got their start at the Comedy Store. And a lot of that was because Carson's people would go over there too and check it out, watch the shows, and then pull those comedians on. And those are the comedians we know, be it Seinfeld or whoever. They all were on stage there at the Comedy Store. So that's a lot of pressure as well for you, right? To go on stage knowing that Pryor's been on that stage before.
Yeah, I guess so. You know, I guess he was never there when I was there, so I didn't really think about it too much.
But now I've just totally screwed you up and you don't want to go on stage anymore.
Like, oh my God. Yeah, I mean, look, those stages, it's pretty amazing all the people that have been on those stages. And so it's, I feel pretty privileged to get to be a part of a club that I think has had a huge impact on comedy and even beyond that, Craig T. Nelson, Michael Keaton, all kinds of people that you don't even like. They did comedy. Sandra Bernhardt, Whoopi Goldberg.
Yeah.
You know, Jim Carrey, like so many people.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah. Oh, it's definitely cool. And it's like one of those cool places to go to if you've never been and you're in the LA area, you got to go check this out. It's like, second to Disneyland is the biggest attraction in LA, I would say, at least for me.
I think that's fair.
Yeah.
I think that's fair.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So I mentioned the pressure of standing up there right now. I've managed people for 30 years. It makes me sound like I've been around forever, but I started a business really young. So I've managed people for a long time. Exactly. I was 7. And one of the difficult things, whether I'm talking to somebody for the first time about money in an interview or later on, it's a really hard topic to talk about. And I sort of compare that to being on stage. Like, that's another frightening thing for people. Why do you think that talking about money is so frightening?
Well, there's so much attached to it. If we don't have money, maybe we don't have any self-value, right? Net worth and self-worth, we think are related. I think that we also, so many of us are trying to present, like, look how successful I am. Mm-hmm. Look, I made a smart move on this thing. And so we start building up all the shame, and then we have to sort of keep it a secret, the places where we misstep, sort of like social media. Look at this great meal I'm having. Look at this great vacation. Of course, we're not showing them the credit card. We're not showing them, when we wrecked the car or when we got thrown out of the hotel. But here's a great picture of a pineapple. So I think with money, we've got all these stories, and then we're carrying all the baggage of our parents. God bless them. But they might have told us you're greedy if you want too much money, or if you're an artist, you're a failure, or whatever it is. And so we're like carrying around and trying to make mom and dad proud or being defiant of them. And money is a way people decide whether we're successful or not. it people make a snap judgment. Yep, they look smart. They do well with their money. They must be good.
Yeah. When I first started a business, I was a little nervous about it, right? And I had this kind of mentor person who actually also ran a business. And he told me, he goes, you know, you're doing the American dream. You found something you love and you're going to do it for a living and you're going to make money at it. And then you're going to hate it. And I go, wait, what? And he's, yeah, they don't tell you the last couple of parts of the American dream. But once you find your passion and then you add money into the mix, it makes it a lot more difficult. It makes it where it's not as fun anymore because now you're doing it for a different reason. You're not doing it for the fun. You're doing it for the money.
Well, absolutely. And even like comedy or anything. Well, now that I'm comfortable, do I want to take a risk?
Right.
Do I want to tell a new joke? Do I want to try a new product line? Well, I'm sort of comfortable. And so then we can get caught in the comfortableness and maybe being innovative and fresh is what got us creative and got things moving. And now we're like, oh, I better protect.
Right. Right. And you know, the thing is like what people don't realize is so, you know, on the hiring side of things, being on the interview side and not like, I ask, like, you know, what are you looking for? What are you looking for as far as compensation? I don't think that anybody has ever given me a straight answer to that. And the thing is if they did, I would probably they would probably end up making more is what I'm saying. You know, it's like, it's funny how it's, we're afraid to talk about it, but the consequences of talking about it could be, well, you get more of it. You know, it's so weird.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, it's a frightening thing because it's risky. If I tell you I want to make $100,000, I'm telling you I think I'm worth it. But what if you think I'm worth 60? Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, then maybe there's this big gap and I don't want to misstep or who am I to think big?
Right. Right. And I think if you're not going to talk about it, you're probably going to make more poor decisions around money.
Well, absolutely, because you're not asking questions. You're not asking other people, what do they invest in? Have you done this before? Where did you have mistakes? Where did you misstep? Great, I'm not going to do those things. You just quietly hope that it all works out. And often it doesn't.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes it does.
Yeah. Well, you know, I talked to somebody. We did a show early on in the season here about sex and pornography. And, you know, it's about the addiction to those things. And
sure,
the person was like, well, you know what? Our parents didn't talk to us about it. Like it was whispered on television where we didn't talk about it. Right. And really, I guess money sort of falls into that same category where it's been whispered for so long that, yeah, we're just uncomfortable in talking about it. And the other thing, though, that we are comfortable talking about, I guess, are the choices that we make around that money, right? Like, we'll obviously, like, we'll, you know, we'll show off our cell phone or, you know, whatever, the iPhone, whatever, I don't even know what number they're on. We'll show off these things or show off the little bling on our watches or whatever, but we won't talk about what got us there. And really, it's like those marketing messages and those emotions, like they're just playing to our emotions. And that's what's really making us make those choices.
Absolutely. I mean, social media, you deserve it now. You should have it. Pay later. Don't you want to look cool? Don't you want to? You deserve it.
Yeah.
You deserve it.
Right.
And we start to buy into it.
Yeah. Yeah, we totally do. So, okay. How do you advise your clients when talking about money? And how do you get people that you're working with to talk about money amongst themselves, like if you're talking to a couple?
Well, you know, it's interesting. A lot of my tax appointments turned into therapy sessions in the beginning. Now they just are therapy sessions. You know, it's interesting because when couples will come in, they don't do it so much anymore, but newer couples, they'll come in and go, hey, we have dinner writing on this. Who's right? Who's wrong? And I'll say, wow, so wait a minute. Are we opposing teams or are we trying to win together? Mm. And they'll just look at me and go, oh, yeah, we're sort of together, right? They've been together so long, they're just sort of used to beating each other up.
Right.
And so getting people to talk about that stuff, asking people, what's your belief on budgeting? What's your belief on saving versus spending? Yeah. I did a workshop. It was 10 weeks in a row. And on the third or fourth week, I asked everybody to go home and talk to their spouse, their parents, their kids, whoever they lived in their house, to ask them about the budget. Like, look at the budget and see if it makes sense. And so this guy came back the next week and he was just, I got to share. And he's very emotional. And so I said, hey, what's up? And he said, well, I did what you asked. I went home and I asked my wife about the budget. And she said, thank you for finally letting me into the marriage. And
wow,
he realized she was a little old fashioned. They both were. Mm-hmm. She was a second wife. He had been putting all the projections of wife number one on wife number two.
Yeah.
And he was feeling a lot of remorse because just didn't dawn on him to actually include her in the conversation.
Wow. Yeah. That's not cool.
Yeah. And, but that happens a lot. That's the thing. That's pretty common.
Yeah. Well, you know, I bet you it's pretty interesting because when I did my taxes this year, I turn them in and I'm passing over all these papers and I'm thinking like, wow, I just passed over everything that I did in the past year, essentially, to this person. Like you get pretty intimate details about their lives when you're looking at this, right?
You do. I was told once that your accountant and your garbage man know everything about you.
Yeah, I could see that. It's a weird feeling because, you know, when I talk to the person that does my taxes, like, you know, we've known each other. We actually like used to be on the PTA together and all this stuff. And it's like, it's kind of weird because, wow, she knows a lot about me. And I'm always thinking that when I'm talking to her and I'm like, I could share whatever with her. So maybe that's why you turn into a therapist.
Absolutely. Well, it's funny because I work with a lot of financial advisors and they'll tell me, oh, so-and-so is coming in to see you today. I'm so proud of them. They're so on track. And then I meet with them. I'm thinking they're not on track at all. But the financial advisors don't actually get to see all the information that I do.
Right.
So they just tell the financial advisor, what do you want to hear? Yeah, that's what we're doing. And I look at it and go, that's not happening at all, but okay.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Because I see the nitty gritty.
Yeah. It's kind of like going to the doctor. Oh, how many drinks do you have in a week? Two. You know, but you're actually looking at you're looking at the blood samples. You're seeing what's actually going on.
I think that's pure vodka.
Yeah, exactly. Two a day. So how do we have that conversation? Like, how do we start to have and be more comfortable in talking about money?
I think one of the first things that I ask people is, if we're going to embark on this journey, are you willing to have conversations and be uncomfortable? And some people will say no. I'm like, okay, well, let's just end the conversation. It's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. There's got to be a willingness to start to have these difficult conversations. What I typically do is I ask people, like, what's sort of your history? What's your story? What'd your parents tell you? And what are you afraid your spouse is going to think about you if they know these things about you? Mm. Like, well, if they know that I like to have expensive tastes, they're going to think I'm greedy and selfish. And so then after we start to get some of that information out, we start, you know, let's check that out. Let's see if that's true and actually have that conversation. One thing that comes up a lot with clients of mine is my parents won't love me if I don't have a super successful business.
Oh, wow.
Or if I don't have the biggest house. And so often I will say to clients that are like, my parents, they're just not going to love me anymore. I'll say to them, listen, why don't you do me a favor? The next time you're talking to your parents, ask them what the exact dollar amount is at which they will stop loving you.
Right.
And they're like, oh my, I'm like, I just sort of get, you know, is it 100,000? Is it a million? Because it's probably not true.
Right.
For most people. There might be a couple people. It's like, it's 1.2 million.
Well, I mean, you're in the LA area. There's got to be a few.
It's exactly. There's a few. But like that to me, it's like, what is that number? Like, at which I'm no longer lovable because I'm not producing. And I do think that we've been, I know I was taught, I am my accomplishments. So it doesn't matter if I'm kind or generous. It's like, did you hit your marks? Did you make the A's? Did you seal the deal? Did you get the fancy car? And so for a while, that was my focus. Like, I got to make sure I'm hitting all the marks. But then when you hit the mark, you got to go hit another one because that's only as good as your last meal.
Right.
And there's no room for taking a break because you're so anxious. Like, I hope that was enough. Oh, I hope this one's enough. Oh, well, maybe if I get 10. And it becomes this hamster on a wheel.
Mm-hmm.
And once I was able to stop and say, wait a minute, this is crazy making. Now, that doesn't mean I don't still sometimes feed into it.
Right.
And I have to go, whoa, there's crazy Bob.
Right,
get off that hamster wheel.
Yeah.
Because it can come quickly. But being aware and then really just shifting my mindset away from that. But I think that's important to ask people, like, what's going to happen if people know the truth about you? If you knew the truth about my financial situation, you might leave me. You might judge me.
Right.
You might move closer to me. We don't know.
Yeah. Now, are you seeing any difference there in people's opinion on money and just finances in general? Did any of that change post-pandemic?
Yeah. What was interesting was when the pandemic first happened, clients were calling me up telling me, oh my God, I think we're going to go bankrupt. My business is going to fail. I don't know how we're going to get through this. Mm-hmm. And there was just pure panic. A year and a half into it, people were saying, oh my God, I cook at home. I used to go out 5-6 nights a week. I didn't realize how much I was spending.
Yeah.
I've gotten to meet my children.
Right.
And what happened was, I think people were more resilient than they realized. And certainly there are businesses that failed and it wasn't great for everybody. But I think by and large, a lot of my clients were surprised that they persevered.
Yeah. I know. Today I went to Starbucks, and now I used to work from an office and the coffee there was awful. So I'd go to Starbucks way more. I opened my app and it's like, you haven't ordered in the last 120 days. So you have no favorites. Like, oh my God, wow. That's an accomplishment. You know, I mean, I thought about that. And then I thought, wow, the $20 that I put on this card in, I don't know, December or something is still on here. That would have been a week back in the old days. And so it's funny. And then with the big quit and people changing, and I feel like, to me, like this kind of the great resignation or the big quit, I feel like it's mm-hmm. a lot about like what you just said, just focusing on family, focusing on stuff that's more important than just making another dollar and making the dollars that you do make go a little further, because you're not spending money out every night or doing things that maybe you shouldn't be doing, you know, like save the cash.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, it's interesting in the US, I think, which is different than Europe and Australia and other places where they take 6 and 8 weeks of vacation and they're less focused about do.
Yeah.
And my friends will say, hey, let's go. Hey, you want to take a trip? We'll go 2 weeks and we'll just lay by a pool. I'm like, lay by a pool? Like, you mean just have fun? That's insane. Why would I do that?
Right.
There's so many things to be done. And I think that's a mindset that it's easy to get into in this country. And I think the pandemic has really helped people stop and say, wait a minute, to what end?
Right.
To what end?
Yeah.
Unless you're doing your own business and putting in the time. But even then.
Yeah, yeah.
Even then, is it worth giving up a relationship with your kid? Is it worth not spending time with your parents in their aging years? Is it like whatever those things are, really?
Right.
Is it worth it? And so being able to stop and say, wow, I actually want to enjoy the ride. I don't want to get to the end of the ride, because the end of the ride, that's the end of the ride.
Yeah.
I want to have as much fun as I can, and I want to delay the end of the journey for as long as possible.
Yeah.
And have a great time doing
it. Totally. And it's such a better mindset. Like, so you just described me over the last like 6 months, right? Like, I mean, first of all, you know, I ran my own business. I decided to sell my business because I was on a train, a little like, you know, like train at the zoo type of thing, right? My kids are there and, you know, we're rolling along and this is the BlackBerry days. So I'm checking messages and there's, you know, something going wrong that I got to deal with and I'm dealing with it. And, you know, I can't remember if it was my daughter or my son, but one of them said, look at that, daddy, look at that. And I'm like, oh yeah, yeah, it's nice. And then I'm like, you know what? I'm here, but I'm not here. Like, this is ridiculous.
Right.
Like literally within 2 weeks, I had an offer to sell my business and just, you know, do something else. Cause I felt like I couldn't be, for me, and there's plenty of people that can do this, but for me and like the way that my bandwidth was for that, I felt like I couldn't be there. Like I wanted to be with my kids and run a successful business. Like it was either good dad or good business. Like that was the choice. That was the crossroad that I was at, like literally that day. And that was the choice I made. And then I went to go and I worked a day job and it was fantastic. But then because of that kind of workaholic thing, I just kept going. You know, I just kept, you know, even though I don't need to, I'm working way beyond the 40. pandemic happened. I'm like, it's not important anymore. I don't need to do that. See, Bob, you're a therapist. I can talk to you.
Absolutely.
No, but that's what you just described. And that's you know, how it's working. And it's great. I think this is like, it's such a better life, you know, it's just such a good thing that you're kind of preaching this thing of like, hey, talk about money. And you do this on your podcast as well. So you've got an entire podcast. Tell us a little about that.
Yeah. So I have a podcast called Money You Should Ask. And what we do is I talk with people about their money journeys, beliefs, blocks, struggles. You know, if I'm talking to a guest that started making investments at 5 and they've done everything right, I'm not interested. Like, I'm interested in the people, you know, I've talked to some really high profile people and they will say it's about relationships. It's about kindness. It's about gratitude. It's about like connection, relational, not transactional. And it's just such a great way for people to be able to hear other people and say, oh my God, they did the same thing I did. Oh, other people have shame. I'm not the only one. I started the podcast, I wrote the book, and I do workshops because I wanted to start conversations around money because people weren't having them. And I didn't get the download either. My parents didn't really know. And it wasn't their fault. They just didn't know. And so I wanted to start conversations about money to really help remove the stigma of shame and to let people know you're not alone. It's so isolating when you're in a bankruptcy, when your credit card debt is horrendous and nobody can know because you got to keep up with the Joneses. It's like, oh my God, it's like, it gives people heart attacks. People commit suicide. It's horrific. And so I want to talk about money. It's not so bad. And guess what? I screwed up a lot too. And maybe you did, and maybe you didn't, but that's okay. Cause we're all human. Yeah. And the one thing I have is gratitude.
Yeah.
I can appreciate, you know, I've traveled the world and I see people that don't even get running water or hot water or water on a daily basis. So when the water turns on, I'm thrilled. And other people are like, yeah, it's supposed to turn on. Yeah. Well, it doesn't for everybody, most people in the world.
Right. Yeah. And you know, it's like, it is appreciating the little things. And I've said good things about the pandemic and I always feel a little bad saying good things about the pandemic because, you know, I mean, it was awful. We all know that. I feel like I need just some like little script or word that where I could just keep saying that, or maybe I just push a button where I say, okay, the pandemic was awful. And you know, it was awful and it was horrible. And a lot of people lost their lives and businesses went out of business. Everything changed. That part was horrible, but it did have that positive benefit of, you know, the pandemic pause of looking outside and watching the squirrels and noticing things that keeping up with the Joneses is not that important.
It's not. Yeah. I don't even like the Joneses. Well, here's the thing. I hear you saying that the pandemic was terrible, and it was. And it's like anything in life. All of the things that have been what some people might say a failure for me, I look at as an education.
Yeah.
And so if I can find the silver lining and not just focus on the negative, sure, that really hurt, or that was really embarrassing. I feel so much like shame, and I got through it. I survived. I got back up. I found a new business. I left that toxic relationship, and all is not lost if we can actually find the good nugget from a bad experience.
Right. Yeah. And I think when you screw up, if you look at it as, hey, I learned something, and just turn it around in that way, because you did. You learned something every single time you make a mistake. And as my career of like, you know, leadership with employees, that's something that I always try. Like, they always think I'm going to be upset with them when they make a mistake, when they screw something up. And I'm like, fantastic. That's not going to happen again. You know, like, they learned something. It's great.
That's right. New information. Don't do that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's always a great thing. Okay. So I got right into talking to you, and then I went into my therapy session with you. But there were some questions that I wrote down in advance here, so I've got to get to these as well. Let's throw these out here because I think the people that are listening would be interested. So this is in general. What would be like our best investment right now?
I still love real estate.
Okay, good.
I love real estate.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's like one of those things, even though it's expensive right now, it feels still like, just do it, right?
I can still go sit on a piece of property.
Exactly.
Like, even if it loses all the value, I can still go sit on it and go, this is mine.
Yeah.
It's worthless, but it's mine.
All right. So what can we, I'm doing this, this is almost like rapid fire here. Maybe I should have a new segment here. What can we do today to improve our money situation? Like, and again, in general, like what's some good kind of rules of thumb that we can do today to improve it?
Like one thing that people just don't do and they have a story is just start saving. Start saving 10%. Start saving $5. I don't care what it is. Start putting a little bit of money aside. On Fridays, take all the $5 bills out of your wallet and go, those go into my little money jar. If I'm going to go out for the weekend, only take the money that I'm going to spend. I'm going to spend $100. Great. If I've got 200 in my wallet, fantastic. But 100 is going to go out of the wallet. Like, start advocating for your own savings, because we're all waiting for that extra bonus or that surprise money. It's not coming. It's not coming for most of you people.
Right.
So just start saving and stop saying that you're the exception to the rule.
Nice. I like that. Okay. Best route to retirement. And again, we're talking in general here.
Passive income, which again, rental, real estate, rental properties. Mm-hmm. It's solid. You know, my grandmother, she was smart. She didn't want to rely on anybody else. She ended up buying about 5 or 6 rental properties. And as she got older, she'd go, 6 is too many. I'm going to sell one. And she'd get a nice windfall of money, but she still had the rents. By the time she reached the last stage of her life, she was down to 1 4-unit property, but but it funded her whole lifestyle.
Yeah.
She could do whatever she wanted. And she was just smart about it.
Yeah. Yeah, the problem is it was your grandma. So she bought it for like,
grandma,
you know, $4,000 each.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
A little more difficult now to buy 5, but yeah.
It is a little more difficult.
But you know, the thing is also the rent prices are so like crazy now that it's much easier and everybody's like wanting to get into a place. So that works out well too. All right. What is Pauly Shore really like?
He's Pauly Shore.
I would guess that he is the same exact person, whether he's on stage or on MTV back in the old days or just who he is.
Pretty much.
Pretty much?
Pretty much.
Okay. All right. That's good. Pretty that's much. Good. All right. And all right. Now, final question here. A joke that you're thinking of adding to your set.
A joke I'm thinking of adding to my set. I want to do a whole set about appreciating my parents for all the damage they did, because it just makes me funnier. Like, so
that's a good
thank
bit.
You for, you know, thank you for shaming me, because now I'm Brazilian.
I like that.
I want to go out and thank my parents for all the hardships and punishments right. that I endured emotionally.
Well, it's a good tribute to the parents.
It's a good tribute to my parents, an homage.
Exactly. Exactly. Now, and actually I'm going to cheat here and go one more question. So what do you like more? Do you like the CPA thing or do you like the comedy thing?
Well, you know what? I'm a weirdo. I guess if I could just do what I wanted all the time, I'd probably tap into the creative, the comedy and stuff like that. But I actually really do enjoy, I'm one of those weirdos, I enjoy doing tax stuff. I enjoy tax strategies. I love beating the system. I love figuring out how to play the game mm-hmm. and then manipulate it to my favor. So I do love all that. But I also enjoy being able to slow down, have a creativity, have a lot of fun, make people laugh. That's like, we all need to laugh a little more. We can't take ourselves too seriously.
Yeah, totally.
It's life is short.
Yeah.
Life is short.
Yeah. You know, I did a, so I was a DJ for years. I had the company that I was talking about earlier was an entertainment company, and literally out of, I don't know, I would do 500 events a year. And out of all of those, the best party was this party of CPAs. So that one, they got wild, man.
I'm sure they did. A lot of pent-up frustration.
Hands down. So, you know, if you're thinking that CPAs, no, they do way more. They have a lot of fun.
That's right.
They bring a lot of things to the party too. I won't mention what that was, but they had some fun.
I'm sure they do.
All right. So one more time, your podcast, and actually tell us a little about your website as well.
Yeah, sure. The podcast is Money You Should Ask, and we come out every week. The website is The Money Nerve, moneynerve.com. And we've got resources on there. We've got access to the book and just all kinds of stuff around money, practical stuff, emotional stuff, therapeutic, financial therapy stuff. There's just a lot of great stuff there where people can read and maybe something resonates with them. And we just, we're here to talk about money and let people know you're not alone. All of us struggle regardless of its 100,000 or 100 million. Mm-hmm. Like, we all have issues that come up for us.
Nice. Nice. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. I'll let you get back. Do you got a set tonight?
No, okay. I'm probably going to do like 3 more tax returns.
Oh, hey, well, that's just as fun.
It's a different set.
Well, Bob, thank you so much for joining me tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
See, I told you talking money could be fun. Thank you for listening and subscribing to Learning More. We encourage you and thank you for rating this podcast and sharing it with friends. As with any podcast that gives medical or legal opinion, the information is not meant to substitute professional advice, and we encourage you to consult a professional to discuss your exact needs. I invite you to join us next week as we begin to talk about children and anxiety. How do you deal as a parent with a child that has anxiety? It's a difficult one, and it's something that a lot of parents are going through right now, especially post-pandemic. So we will cover that next week. Hey, if you've got an idea for a future episode, let us know. Just head over to learningmorepodcast.com and make a suggestion. That's also where you can find all of our past episodes, show links. All of that is right there available on the website. Again, thank you for listening. Thank you for subscribing. I'm Russ, and I look forward to learning more with you next time.